I've always struggled with finding time to manage my finances. At the end of a busy week, the last thing I want to do is spend time budgeting all of my expenses or tracking down customer service teams to cancel old subscriptions I no longer use. But now I use Rocket Money, and it does all that for me. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so you can grow your savings. Stop wasting money on the things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Washington Post. That's rocketmoney.com/Washington Post.
4 years ago, I essentially went on an all-consuming quest to understand the American presidency, all 230 or so years of it. Well, around the same time that I started working on the presidential podcast, early in the 2016 campaign, one of my colleagues at the Post had started on his own ambitious quest.
In fact, in the summer of 2015, when Trump was suddenly doing very well in the polls for the Republican nomination, I approached my editor and said, hey, what if I read a bunch of Trump's books just to see what they tell us about him?
This is Carlos Lozada. He's the Post's nonfiction book critic.
And he liked the idea, but he told me to hurry because, you know, interest will probably not last that long, you know, and I thought the same thing.
So Carlos started reading. He read 8 books. 3 were memoirs, including The Art of the Deal. 3 were business advice books. And 2 were books about politics. Carlos thought that might be the extent of his reading about Trump.
But he started winning primaries, and suddenly there's all these white working class books that were coming out.
Books like Hillbilly Elegy and White Trash and Strangers in Their Own Land.
So I started reviewing those because people wanted to hear about this segment of Trump's support base.
Then Trump won the presidency.
And there's all these resistance books that start coming out.
Rules for Resistance, American Resistance, One Nation After Trump.
So I start reading those.
And that's when Carlos realized that his own experience of the Trump administration was about to be defined by this ongoing effort. Carlos was going to try to understand the battles and the changes and the conversations going on in our country through the books that were being published, through the broad range of voices who were trying to be heard in this moment.
And so I started doing that, whether it was books about conservatism or books about truth. I decided I wanted to try to look at this more broadly and not just look at books one at a time, but try to think about what they were telling us collectively about Trump, about the country.
Carlos is now 4+ years into that relentless exercise. And he's read how many Trump-related books?
I say 150, which is probably rounding down.
He's still reading and reading and reading. But just recently, he published a book of his own called What Were We Thinking? A Brief Intellectual History of the Trump Era. It's sort of Carlos Lozada's version of the presidential podcast. It's his effort to catalog, but even more, to connect all of the things he's been learning. Back in 2016, when Carlos was still in the early days of his Trump reading list, he came on the Ulysses S. Grant episode of Presidential to talk about Grant's memoirs. You might remember listening to that. We talked about what that book revealed, both about Grant, the person, and also about the nature of the nation and the presidency during the Civil War era. So, it's now with both admiration and appreciation for his zealous commitment to the books on the presidency that I am excited to share with you, presidential listeners, my latest conversation with Carlos Lozada. I'm Lillian Cunningham with The Washington Post, and this is a special episode of Presidential.
Yeah. shall resign the presidency effective at noon tomorrow.
What your country can do for you.
A date which will live in infamy.
In 1821, so 5 years before he died, Thomas Jefferson, one of the most iconic wordsmiths of early America, wrote an autobiography. Or, as Jefferson put it, quote, "some recollections of dates and facts concerning myself." In 1852, Franklin Pierce approved the publication of The Life of Franklin Pierce. It was a glowing biography of him. He was then a presidential candidate, and it was written by his friend Nathaniel Hawthorne. Now, former and would-be presidents haven't always captured their lives in books, but writings, both by presidents and about presidents, have, for a really long time, played a role in how their presidential images are shaped. Books have been key to how we understand presidents and how we as citizens understand the arc of American history. It turns out that positive books written about a president don't necessarily beget positive legacies. That's not really the case because time has a way of correcting the record. Instead, what's important here is that the printed word enables us to explore and remember and, most of all, to re-examine. It's no coincidence that some of the most forgotten presidents, presidents like Chester Arthur, are also the ones who burned their papers. They're the ones who left us so little to read. These days, it seems that every presidential administration ushers in a larger wave of books. You can see that as self-preserving when they're memoirs, or as self-serving when the author of the books has a lot to gain financially or politically from publishing it. But you can also see it as an act of civic engagement, as a way of further democratizing the presidency, of holding it accountable to more and more voices, creating space for more and more narrators of our nation's story. So what does the vast landscape of books in the Trump era start to tell us about ourselves and the story we're narrating? We have as our guide post-nonfiction book critic and author of What Were We Thinking, Carlos Lozada. All right, Carlos, so you read Ulysses S. Grant's memoir in, I guess that was spring of 2016.
Is that when that was? Oh my God. Okay.
Yeah. So more than 4 years ago, I think it must have been late April, probably. That's how I think about presidents, my timeline. So that would have put that pretty early in this exercise that you did of digging into all the Trump literature. Since then, you've read, as you say, more than 150 books of the Trump era.
I think someone did a tally that at this point in the Obama presidency, there had been maybe, 400 or 500 books about Obama, which sounds like a lot. But in the equivalent period in the Trump presidency, there's been about 1,200. So I've only read a small fraction of those when you look at it that way.
Well, the books that you've read aren't just biographies of Trump or accounts from inside the White House. They're also books that more broadly are creating a dialogue about who we are as a country today. They're books about the Me Too movement. They're books about the direction the Republican Party needs to head. There are books about the evolution and the erosion of democracy in America. Is it unique for a presidency to spawn just such an outpouring of soul searching into who we are as a nation?
I think we always have those kinds of writings and those kinds of debates. And that's what I love about, one of the things I love about the United States, right? It has defined itself in writing from the very beginning, right? From Thomas Paine's Common Sense, right? On Foreword. This is a country that, fights in many ways, but it fights on paper. It fights in writing. But I think that's part of who we are. The notion of America as an idea is a cliche, but it's also true. And so we fight over that idea in a lot of ways, but I love that we fight about it in books.
So you actually have a line in your book that I underlined where you say, "History's connecting the Trump era to the long arc of America's democratic struggle feel particularly essential now." So I'm curious, through this exercise of reading all these books, what is it that you feel like you've learned about where the Trump presidency sits in this arc of presidential history?
We look for ways in which it's unprecedented, in which it's different, in which it's unique. But one thing that comes across very clearly is that it's right smack in the middle of the arc of America. All the big debates we're having now are ever present in the American experience. If you read Erica Lee's America for Americans, you see just a relentless case that as much as America has defined itself as a nation of immigrants, living alongside that tradition is a strong and constant strain of xenophobia and of the rejection of outsiders. If you read a book like Carol Anderson's One Person, No Vote, you see the evolution and persistence of efforts to restrict voting rights and to suppress the vote. If you read a book like Jill Lepore's These Truths, you see this enduring struggle to live up to those self-evident truths of the Declaration of Independence. And you realize that all these fights that we're having in the Trump era are not an outlier. They are not just a feature of the American experience, but in some ways it's definition. That battle is what it means to engage in civic life in America. And in some ways that's both incredibly depressing and also in some ways kind of uplifting, because it just means that okay, now we're up. Now it's our turn to engage in that fight. And what is perhaps unprecedented about the Trump era is that we're having all of them all at once, right? All these different and enduring battles seem to be all happening together.
So do you feel like you've landed for yourself on, a sense of at the core what it is that makes Trump's presidency different from other presidencies? I feel like that's a question I get a lot, having done the presidential podcast, that question of, how unprecedented do you think he really is?
I think part of it is and this is something you can glean from reading these books, but also just from, watching the Trump presidency in action, and is that he doesn't even attempt to try to expand his base of support. He doesn't make even a lip service effort to say that he's the president for all Americans. And that is something that usually leaders who are elected with a less than strong mandate from the public feel they have to try to reach out, to find middle ground, to to convince people of the rightness of their views, you know, and actions and beliefs. And Trump simply doesn't try to do that. He governs like the permanent outsider, kind of rabble-rouser on the sidelines, even when he's in power. To me, that's been one of the most unprecedented parts of watching Trump in action. There's also been a lot of just what has become popularly known as sort of the breaking of norms, right? That there's been these norms of behavior that have slowly grown up around the presidency, and Trump, either out of ignorance of them or indifference to them, just doesn't follow them. One of the most useful books I read in this period is called Unmaking the Presidency by Susan Hennessy and Benjamin Wittes. And it explores that issue precisely, like how these norms around the presidency were built up over time and what it means for a president to just kind of gleefully disregard them. And whether that's regarding the independence of the Justice Department, for instance, or anything else. And for them, it's this idea that this is a incessantly performative presidency. And that's a theme that comes up in a lot of the books surrounding Trump.
I think that because Trump is so present in public life, there's almost a sense that, even without having read all the books that you've read, that people sort of understand his leadership style. They see kind of every day on the news, on Twitter, how he operates. So, I'm curious what you feel like are some new insights that you gleaned from reading all these books that maybe you wouldn't have absorbed just by being kind of an average citizen observer of the presidency.
Right. The weird thing about Trump is that for all his dishonesty, one of the books was written by our fact-checking team, that catalogs just the relentless wave of, falsehoods. That Trump, for all his dishonesty, there's really not a lot of artifice there. He presents as he is. In a sense, it was easy to see a lot of this coming. I read several of Trump's own books spanning the 80s and 90s and more recently. And yes, these are all ghostwritten books, but even ghostwritten books reveal something about the subject, just like propaganda reveals its intentions, right? In these ghost-written books, you see all the qualities that we've come to know so well of Trump in the White House, his sense of grievance and his vengefulness, his insecurities, his mistrust of the press, yet his incessant quest for its approval, right? His willingness to deceive, to denigrate opponents. It's all there. It's all in from the art of the deal on forward. So the Trump years can be shocking, but if you read his own words, they really wouldn't be all that surprising. Now, what I've learned more specifically about Trump in the White House is that this notion that he's this strategic thinker and master of misdirection, that he's trying to, remove attention from one scandal by opening up another, kind of feels like nonsense. I think that he makes decisions very impulsively and instinctively and predictably, in the sense that whatever view of his own interest emerges is always what prevails, right? Even if there's matters of high principle, like, what judge you appoint to the Supreme Court or whatever, it always ends up being just a matter of kind of like naked political survival. So it always makes me laugh a little bit when I hear or when I read, especially resistance type writers, saying like, Trump's not my president. Of course not. Like, he's the one who made that choice long before you declaring it isn't what made it so. He governs for himself, for his base, for his family in some ways. And so I feel that Trump has managed to shock without always managing to really surprise anymore.
Have you seen any change in the type of people who are writing books about the presidency today? Like, more journalists are writing books, more insiders are writing books.
I think one thing we're seeing now is a lot more former officials from presidential administrations writing memoirs well before the presidents are even out of office, right? That used to be something that was frowned upon. George Stephanopoulos' memoir of the Clinton years, for example.
And just as an aside, Stephanopoulos served as communications director and advisor for Bill Clinton, but then he published a tell-all memoir about his time in the White House in 1999.
Right. There was a huge controversy over the fact that he wrote it while Clinton was still in office. And so I think that sort of tacit agreement, you know, that you'll hold your fire until later on is just gone. And especially with this administration, you're seeing such a revolving door of people leaving the administration early and immediately is like, you know, heading straight to a literary agent to then come out with their books.
So Richard Goodwin, who was an aide to Lyndon Johnson, wrote something of a tell-all about Johnson's presidency and how he handled Vietnam. But that book didn't come out until 20 years after Johnson left office. And then there's the book by George Stephanopoulos that came out 7 years into Clinton's presidency. But then you have a book like Fire and Fury, right, by Michael Wolff, which is one of the books you studied. And that came out only 2 years into Trump's presidency. So for those of us who are, you know, average citizens trying to just better understand the presidency, what do you think we lose and, you know, what do we gain maybe from the fact that it seems like this publishing process of presidential books is getting so sped up?
The rush of books in the moment are exciting and certainly helpful, but they're the very first draft of the first draft. The thing about Fire and Fury is that it was such a huge publishing event. It sold like crazy. I remember when I got it, I had to basically stay up all night reading it to sort of post my review the next day. I've had to do that several times during the Trump presidency. I did that with Jim Comey's memoir, but Fire and Fury sort of set a template for a lot of the even more rigorously reported Trump books to follow. You know, it was all about, you know, getting the craziest anecdote, the most, you know, oh my God moment about what was going on, to the point that it makes you feel like, you know, the chaos is all there is. I think that it's been hard to shake Fire and Fury. And not just for the authors, but also for the way we then talk about these books. What gets reported on and discussed on cable and everything else about a lot of these books is just whatever the most unbelievable anecdote is, and not necessarily some of the most significant, you know, revelations in those books. It's all about the mayhem inside the administration, and, you know, people steal documents off his desk, or, you know, like all this kind of chaos inside the White House. And yet what I've come to through this process of reading all these books is that the books that have been most meaningful to me have been those that take you out of that bubble, out of the ones that try to place this within a larger context of the American story. We are better served when we don't obsess over President Trump himself, but when we think about what this era, what the forces that led to Trump and Trumpism say about us as a country.
Yeah, and so I think that helps explain why, you know, when you review and write about Trump era books, you're really defining that quite broadly, right? You know, it's not all fire and fury. I mean, you include sweeping American history books like These Truths by Jill Lepore mm-hmm. and The Soul of America by John Meacham. And then also books like How to Be an Anti-Racist and I'm Still Here.
Yeah.
And The Line Becomes a River, Dispatches from the Border, right?
I think there is definitely something to that. I think that you have different kinds of Trump books, and there are the insider accounts and the journalistic accounts that are obsessively sort of zeroed in on what's happening in the White House. And there's value to those, but I think the kind of thing that you're talking about is found in a whole other set of Trump books that are, in a way, derived from what's happening in the White House because they build off of the major controversies and debates of this time, whether it's over immigration or identity or gender equality. And they are opportunities for writers to, especially memoirists, for instance, to put their story into that conversation. And there have been wonderful immigration memoirs that are not specifically about the family separation policy, right? But that are an incredible window into that world. There's been an explosion of writing and analysis and memoirs on identity writ large. And that is a huge part of the debate during the Trump years without having to be focused on Donald Trump himself. Some of the best books, the most essential books of the Trump era are not about Trump at all, or have him purely as a secondary figure lurking in the background.
So I suppose my last question for you is, when you put all of this together, you know, your dive into the intricacies of the Trump presidency, but also your long traverse through books about the history of the Republic and the future of democracy, you know, does all of this leave you with the sense that we are experiencing right now a fundamental change in the course of this nation? Or does it leave you with the feeling that what we're doing is really just continuing our journey along the same path?
I'm reminded of the line that, you know, the moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards justice. And I think that not just the Trump era, but I think the American story in general suggests that, yes, the moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards who knows, right? It bends towards uncertainty. You know, there's no reason to think that things will kind of work out in the end, you know, depending whatever your definition of workout is. And so I think there is a sense in which some of these books persuasively make the case that we're in a moment of peril about American democracy. And so I don't think there's anything inevitable about the persistence of America's democratic values. I think it's something that needs to be constantly safeguarded and protected.
To end this episode, I'm going to read just a couple lines from Carlos's book. Here's the quote. "The American experiment is not just worth the fight, it is synonymous with it. That is the fullness of its meaning. With passions always strained, the bonds of affection always near the breaking point, the pursuit of freedom and prosperity and belonging is an endless American struggle, an enterprise in equal measures, exhausting, exasperating, and exhilarating." Many thanks to my colleague Carlos Lozada for sharing his time and insights for this episode. Once again, Carlos is the nonfiction book critic for The Post. You can read his reviews on WashingtonPost.com. He's also the author of a new book called What Were We Thinking? A Brief Intellectual History of the Trump Era. Also, very, very many thanks to the great producer who worked on this with me, Bishop Sand, to the director of audio, Jess Stahl, and to art director, Rachel Orr. You can check back for more special episodes of Presidential that we'll be putting out in the weeks ahead. And in the meantime, you can find me and Presidential on Twitter and on Instagram. As a little bonus, I asked Carlos to recommend 5 books that were published in the Trump era that he would particularly recommend for Presidential listeners. And I'll share his list of those 5 books on Twitter and Instagram if you want to check them out there. I'm Lillian Cunningham. Thank you so much, as always, for listening.